29 minutes past 5, Monday, the 7th of July, 2025. Welcome back to the Richie Allen Show. Without further ado, it is a pleasure to welcome back the broadcast journalist, a longtime friend of this programme's. He's live in Bristol this evening. Let's welcome back and say hello again to Tony Gosling. Welcome back, T. Thanks for taking the call. How are you?
Yeah, very well. Really a bit disappointed. I was sitting there at 9 o'clock this morning waiting for all the calls. Oh, you've done this exhaustive, fully referenced investigation into the London bombings, and nothing came through for some reason. I don't know why. Possibly there is a narrative that they're trying to push towards World War III that was actually making the terror real back 20 years ago, that this was really all about, and the mass media can't be trusted at all.
Do you remember the actual day itself? And being 4 or nearly 4 years in the wake of September the 11th, were you aware that something might not be right with it as it was happening?
Well, yes, immediately, pretty much, because, yeah, I think you just put your finger on it, because 9/11 had just happened. We were in the process of we'd already formed, really, a 9/11 truth organisation in the UK. And people like Ian Henshaw, who wrote the definitive book on 9/11. So basically a little handbook. It's everything you need with nice pictures to know that it was completely untrue. The whole story about bin Laden and all this stuff they were telling us, and how it was clearly the intelligence services that had done this, that the aircraft had most likely been swapped. So aircraft had taken off from ordinary airports on 9/11, and then other aircraft with the same transponders same code on the transponders had been swapped, and that all the air defence radars and all the normal civil radars in the States that had been hacked. We were very much aware that something like this needed to be thoroughly checked. And I can remember the day itself, we went round to a house of a guy called Adrian Connock, who was living in Bristol at the time, who went on to do some film, I think it was called Mind the Gap, about the 7/7 bombings. And literally we were going through the news and recording stuff as it was coming out, and the most the thing that we looked at it, right, this is definitely a put up job, was when the we got a PDF, saved the PDF and printed it out on the day from Tel Aviv, which was the Jerusalem desk of Associated Press, with an article entitled "Netanyahu Changed Plans Due to Warning." Well, what warning? There was a warning. There was no warning. And Netanyahu was in town, and apparently this is what the article said. This was the Tel Aviv Associated Press desk phoning up the London embassy of the Israelis. And they were told by Dan Shaham at the Israeli embassy, oh, yeah, we got a warning. And Netanyahu didn't go anywhere near the place he was supposed to go, because we made sure he knew well beforehand. And we told Scotland Yard. Well, Scotland Yard subsequently denied that in the succeeding days. So quite clearly from day one, anyone that really wanted to know about what was going on knew there was something fully up with what happened on 7/7, and the official narrative immediately that was coming out about it being a surprise attack was a lie.
Is the article still available to read? I'm aware it's real. I'm not challenging you at all. I know it was reported in Israel that Netanyahu was warned. Is that still available to this day, or has it been scrubbed?
Well, it was reported all around the world, that particular Associated Press article, and the wire services all over the world. One thing they do is they tend, I'm talking about the deep state here, is they tend to go back over all the incriminating evidence against them and try and scrub it from the internet. But I'm sure it's out there somewhere. If anybody wants to just look for on a search engine that is not Google or DuckDuckGo or one of the other rubbish search engines, Netanyahu changed plans due to warning, you'll find it.
Can we do something a little bit different today? I don't think we'd ever have done this before, you and I. So imagine you're right, because I have a fair idea of your central thesis, because we've been mates for 15 or so years and we've talked about it before. So imagine you're right then, and that in the deepest pits of intelligence, people come together And they say we need to generate more public support for these awful wars of aggression in the Middle East. So this is the starting point. How do you imagine it works? Now, bear with me. I know this is not your thing, right? But I want you to bear with me. I want you to do this for me today. How do you think it goes? Like, what do we get a couple of people at the highest level saying we need to generate a much bigger and wider support for basically the wars of aggression, the terrible wars in the Middle East. Therefore, we should seriously consider staging an attack on the streets of London or somewhere in the UK. Is that how it begins, do you think, Tony? Where does it come from, that idea?
Well, I think originally it comes from the people at the Project for the New American Century and this idea of the Yinon Plan from the 1980s. So there was way back in that time, Oded Yinon, who's an academic and journalist in Israel, in the 1980s came up with this plan for balkanizing the Middle East, but they needed to have a casus belli in order to, the Americans that is, in order to have all these interventions in the Middle East, you know, as we know, you know, the Iraq War, et cetera, which was a few years before 7/7. And so I think that's where it comes from. Remember, there's loads and loads of secret national intelligence organizations out there. One of the most pernicious is called Le Cercle, which is a group of mostly ex-intelligence people, some of them actually serving, I think it was, the guy who was in charge of the vaccines. He was on Le Cercle as well in the cabinet under Boris. But this organization is extremely secretive. These are the people, I think they decide that they're going to actually implement these things. So, you know, the program is there from the 1980s, from Netanyahu's book as well, which was all about terrorism, how the West can win, it was called. That also, I think, came out in the 1980s. And so the plan is there. For the US superpower to be able to intervene wherever it wants around the world. Obviously, 9/11 was the biggie, the Pearl Harbor, as Brzezinski said, we need a new Pearl Harbor. So the thing is, there's lots and lots of stuff in the media all the time. But you need, if you're an evil person, you need to have these terrorist incidents, whether it's the train bombings in Spain, whether it's the Charlie Hebdo attack type stuff in France, or whether it's the 7/7 London bombings. I mean, think also, of course, about the Christchurch Mosque massacre carried out by a Nazi who was very much in the eyes of the New Zealand intelligence people in New Zealand. So all of the countries that are needed to be brought along on board, something big has to happen in their country in order to send a shockwave through the system of the... I mean, it's essentially that's what it does, isn't it? The mass media is like the nerve center of humanity.
It's still a massive operation, though, Tony. And this is the reason I want to stay with this for a few minutes.
I would say not necessarily, no.
Well, let me explain why I think it might be. Let me explain. Hang on.
People involved in doing it, actually.
Yeah, well, let me explain why I think it might be massive. So for our listeners who might be new to this, the men blamed for it are Hasib Hussein, Mohammed Sadiq Khan, Jermaine Lindsay, and Shehzad Tanweer. They're dead now. And it is alleged that they blew themselves up on these trains and on this bus and killed 52 people at the same time. Right. Now, it is widely believed by researchers like yourself that bombs were placed under the carriages of these trains and that maybe the guys themselves weren't carrying any bombs at all. Do you want to explain for our listeners? The belief is that the guys were completely innocent and that they might have agreed to attend, ironically when you listen to Peter Power, but they might have agreed to come down to London to participate in a training exercise. Is that what we think happened? Just to go over this again for people who are new to it.
I don't know if you know, I did a BBC programme.
Yes.
About maybe 15 years ago. This is a conspiracy files show. Yeah. For an hour, a documentary into it all. And as part of that, we got the producer, Tristan Quinn, to watch the BBC Gladio series, which shows the NATO intelligence services blowing up things all over Europe, mainly in the 1990s, but also a bit in the 80s. And so there's a track record for this sort of thing. But look, if you want to look at something specific, like the tube trains. So we had, literally, if you look at the people talking today on the television about it, many of them had their legs blown off. Now, this is commensurate with bombs being under the trains and not necessarily in the trains. So there's no CCTV footage or photographs of any of the so-called perpetrators in the carriages of the trains or on the platforms. There's, I think, one of Hasib Hussein in one of the shops upstairs in King's Cross or somewhere like that, but nothing to put them in. In fact, even Channel 4 News' John Snow pointed this out at the time. He came down with the camera crew downstairs saying, counting 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, all the way up to 25 cameras. And he says, you haven't found any photographs of any of these people on the trains from any of these cameras. So there's that for a start. And the other thing is the access of this company, Variant Systems, which is an Israeli military run company where the boss of the parent company was on the run at the time for fraud. And actually, I think he was at the time of the bombings, he was in Namibia. He was the American Securities and Exchange Commission were after the guy. There's a crooked company with an Israeli military guy in charge of it. They were given the contract called Variant Systems to do CCTV all over the London Underground. And they had access in at the nighttime to the tube tunnel. And that contract started just a couple of months before the bombings happened. So there's all sorts of evidence, including the fact, if you look at the photographs, you'll see the tube trains have been derailed, blown, you know, some sort of explosion underneath them, it looks like. One of the most damning bits of evidence is that from Mark Honingsbaum, who was at the Edgware Road, I think it was, explosion from the Guardian straight away afterwards. He was talking to people who'd just come out of the trains, and he did an audio report for the Guardian on 7/7 on the day itself, where twice he talks about the bombs, people saying the bombs were under the trains. Now, I spoke to Mark Honingsbaum maybe about a week or so after the bombings, maybe 2 weeks afterwards, and I said, well, Mark, you know, on that audio report, you say the bombs were under the trains. I phoned him up at the Guardian. And yet in your article that comes out in the next day's paper, it says the bombs were inside the trains. I say, how do you explain, you know, what happened? How do you explain that? And there was a long pause. And he then said to me, not everything I submit as copy ends up in the next day's paper.
Right.
So I think they're, you know, right from the word go. And it's also the fact that we've now got everything is digital in the print media world. And we've got very, very much less live stuff on TV. A lot of it is pre-recorded, etc. So there's all sorts of evidence to me that points towards, you know, this is just one. I mean, we did a report 10 years after, which I sent to you, which has got 13 massive holes in the official account. So none of this is being looked at, Richie. And that is because there is most definitely a attempt to get a third world war going in the Middle East, and Muslims have got to be demonized. And that's part of the idea, just as Jews were in Nazi Germany, actually.
You're listening to Tony Gosling. Tony is live in Bristol, broadcast journalist, former BBC journalist. Check out his radio show Fridays at 5 o'clock, not the BCFM politics show with Tony and Martin and many, many fascinating learned men and women. We're talking about the 20th anniversary of the 7th of July bombings. Just to go back on something, a point I didn't finish. So if this company then had taken over the running of the CCTV on London Underground, this Israeli-based company, and it would have had access during times when trains were not running, so in the small hours of the morning, it sounds to me like a very big undertaking to fit out carriages with bombs, to fit out a bus with a bomb, and to coordinate all of that. What I mean, Tony, is, look, how do I know? But I'm going to guess that you might need a couple of dozen people. You might need more than that to run an operation like that. And even though I think, and the reason why I'm not challenging Tony here, is because the Peter Power clip was enough for me to believe that the official story is nonsense. It's nonsense. So I'm not going to play devil's advocate here. They lied about what happened. I don't know exactly what happened or who did it, but I believe the four men who died were innocent. And you don't know this, by the way. But the sister of one of the bombers reached out to me to speak to me when I was doing television in London and said she'd love to come on and talk about it. Would really love to get into it. But there'd been some agreement in the family to try and just kind of get on with their lives and, you know, to bury it, to put it behind them. But they knew full well that these lads were not suicide bombers or radical Islamists. But Tony, this whole thing about putting your faith in people to carry out something like that and then trusting that they'll never blow the whistle on it ever. It's a risk, isn't it? I mean, it must be a risk. If you get people to plant bombs on trains and then it all happens on the 7th of July and then 52 people are dead and it's on every news channel in the world, you're taking a bit of a risk that somebody won't say something.
I don't think so. I think it's a very simple thing to do. If you've got a small military intelligence or special forces team to plant the bombs, the guy on the bus, by the way, I don't know if you've ever spoken to Daniel Obuchicki. No. I interviewed years ago, and he says that he was very much aware of what was happening. I think he did a presentation in London called the Peter Power Terror Drill Inquest. And Daniel, he was all over the Voice magazine, I think it was, a year after the bombings, a big front page spread. But he said there was nobody fitting the description of Hussein on the bus, but there was a little guy, white guy, who had a rucksack, and he went upstairs. And when he came downstairs, he recognized this guy because he was just looking suspicious. And he got off the bus just before the bomb went off. And so all you need a team to, a military intelligence or a most likely special forces team to plant those bombs that are used to planting bombs, maybe in the West Bank or anywhere else. Who knows? I think that was an Israeli military hit on London. I mean, you only need a small group of people to plant those bombs, maybe one or two under the tube trains. But what you do need is a complicit system at the Home Office, within the Metropolitan Police, in order to persuade people to cover things up afterwards. You need to have those. It's a bit like the JFK assassination. If you can control the two or three institutions that are likely to possibly cause you trouble afterwards, and also you've got a good deal of influence within the press as well, then that becomes a sort of troubleshooting job after you've done the job. But doing the job itself, I think, is a fairly simple task. Did you want me to just run through some of my?
Yeah, I do. I do. But just before you do, there will be Jews listening to this program and they will say, here we go again. If somebody trips over a banana skin, it's got to be a Jew. There's no real evidence that Israel was behind it. Our people, and by our, because I live in this country, our intelligence agencies and our military bosses, they're no more or no less despicable, in my opinion, than the Israelis, than the Mossad. So why does it always have to be Israel? Why couldn't it just be the deep state here who decided let's grow some enthusiasm, let's generate some more support for the never-ending Middle Eastern wars? Why does it always have to be Israel?
Well, the reason why it points at Israel particularly is, first of all, these endless wars and the whole project for a new American century and the Enon plan all do benefit Israel. So there's no point in all these endless wars if you don't see it that way. But also, as I said right at the start, the Israeli embassy had a warning a bomb attack was about to happen, but they apparently didn't share it with anybody. So how did they know? That's an obvious one. But anyway, I will quickly run through these. Okay. So you've got, first of all, the alleged bombers are supposed to have caught a train from Luton. A couple of people did freedom of information requests to a Network Rail and found that the train they were supposed to catch was cancelled that day. And it meant that the various times in the official government narrative couldn't have been true.
This is important.
What we know now is that their Scotland Yard there are looking through train timetables going, oh, well, they probably got this train. They didn't check. And this goes exactly with what people have told us from places like Luton, where they're supposed to have caught the train, is that nobody came to ask anybody anything. I got that exactly because we went up to Leeds in the months after the bomb attack. And just exactly as people were saying, well, no police have been around to ask any questions here. There's also the case of the guy, I can't remember his name, but he had handed in evidence about the ICRA bookshop in Leeds because he'd been fixing their computers to West Yorkshire Police 6 months before the attack, saying, look, you've really got to investigate these guys. It's complete nutters in here. And then after the event, he was told by the police, oh, we never received the information. So, you know, he was pretty annoyed about that. Martin Gilbertson is his name. So anyway, there's that. There's also Netanyahu, as I said, got a warning.
Yeah, but if the Israelis were behind it, hang on, if the Israelis were behind it, why the need to warn Netanyahu to change his plans? I don't understand that.
Well, they knew. This is the point, is they knew something was about to happen. But yeah. That Scotland Yard denies that the Israelis told them. And the whole story, if you even today, they're saying there was no warning, there was a warning. Okay, so who had the warning? Who knew something was about to happen? That was the Israeli embassy, Dan Shaham. Bring him in for questioning. No, it's never happened, apparently. But anyway, there's also the French anti-terrorism expert, Christophe Chabot. He, at the time, actually said these tube train bombs were really powerful, unlikely to have been homemade TATP, much more likely C4 military explosives, right? So this is the story, is they made up the bombs at home. And he's saying, as an anti-terror expert, this is not homemade explosive that's been used. You mentioned yourself the Peter Power terror drills. Well, if you sit down and compare the likelihood of the same three tube stations being involved in a terror drill and in a real operation, which he called a spooky coincidence, I seem to remember, on the TV, you work out the probability. It's about 8 billion to 1 that Peter Bauer says there's no that there was no connection between the two. The people who commissioned those the Peter Power terror drill, we took ages to find this out, but around about 8-9 years after the bombings, it was told by Power himself on some program that the people who commissioned the work, Reed Elsevier, who are publishers, but they're also event organizers. They organized Britain's biggest annual arms fair, XL Arms Fair in Docklands. There's also reports of chemical and biological attack police drills going on before the attacks that morning. Then you've got the fact that what happened afterwards, there was no proper public inquiry or proper trial.
No, there was an inquest. There was only an inquest. That's right.
Yeah, and the inquest means you can't compel witnesses to attend.
That's right.
And this is what actually... some of the families are still saying, I was watching on Sky TV last night, the families are still saying, well, we never had a public inquiry. All we have is these inquests. You can't. And an inquest is designed for a single death. 54 people died. So this is obviously needs a public inquiry. Blair said at the time, who was, of course, the PM, good old war criminal Blair, that it would be a ludicrous diversion to have a public inquiry into this, right? So he's just saying that the normal course of the law is a ludicrous diversion. Well, we all know about Blair, don't we? And what a snake he is. So none of the questions were actually answered by the families at the inquest. It was actually horrific for them. And if you speak to any of the families of people that lost loved ones, they all agree on this, that they were just completely stonewalled. This guy, Haroun Aswat, was the apparent mastermind at the Finsbury Park Mosque. They had a little group of people who were part of something called Al Mujarun, which is known as an MI5 operation. He was in touch with all the four alleged bombers on the day of the attack, and then he was arrested for a while, but then he was shipped out to the United States on another charge. So they whisked him out of the country. He wasn't even there at the inquest. This guy was chit-chatting with the alleged bombers. But one of the most important things was dug out by a friend of mine, Fran Anderson, from London, who was looking into this with us at the time. The alleged bombers, Mohammed Sadiq Khan and Shahzad Tanweer, were given terrorism training via the ICRA bookshop in Beeston in Leeds by a former Royal Navy Special Boat Service soldier called Martin McDade. He was taking them over to Cumbria and saying, well, we can do some terrorist training here, blah, blah, blah. What is the Special Boat Service doing, training people to bomb London and attack people? Well, that's obviously,
this doesn't make any sense, Tony. It makes no sense to me at all, this, because everybody...
But they're being framed, aren't
they? Being framed, yeah, but why would they even consent to do terrorism training? Like, Mohammed Sadiq Khan was beloved in his community. This youth worker. This was a guy whose all his ducks were in a row. A kid with a very, very bright future. I can't imagine why, if somebody said to him, we'll take you out in the countryside and we'll give you some terrorism training, why would he participate in it? I don't understand that.
Well, I'm just saying, you better ask Martin Gilbertson, or you better ask Martin McDade. You know, Gilbertson was up there. He was working in the ICRA bookshop and he knew exactly what was going on. All I'm saying is that this was revealed in all the, you know, the way a lot of this stuff has come out is just little bits and bops here and there. Maybe a one news story a couple of years afterwards. Gosh, isn't that amazing? Look, yeah. Someone from the Special Forces was training these guys and very close to them. So that's a pretty comprehensive list. But I did get a phone call, by the way, after that documentary went out on BBC, the Conspiracy Files, from a guy. He said, I've been working in anti-money laundering up in the Met Police. And I can tell you that one of the bombers was actually a money launderer. That was his job. And he was assuming that he'd been brought down to London to meet people to carry on with his money laundering. I think that was Shahzad Tanweer, the guy that was doing that. Maybe one of the other ones. I can't remember. But anyway, I was getting some quite interesting calls from people after that thing went out on the BBC. But they don't want to talk to me now. In fact, I contacted the company that's just built, I think it was for Sky over the last few weeks, or maybe BBC. I'm not sure who's put this out, but there's been a film out about the 7/7 bombings, talking to the families and victims, etc. And so I tried to contact them tail end of last year, saying, look, I've got all sorts of things to say about this. They wouldn't even let me know who the producer was. They're like, the media now, the mass media now, is like a fortress. It's not allowing information in that it doesn't like, particularly to do with terrorism, politics, or anything like that. Because they've got this hidden agenda.
Yeah, it's a Sky documentary. I've watched a little bit of it. It's on Sky Documentaries. In fact, there are so many comments coming in, I better read some of them. Tony Gosling is our guest this evening. We're talking about the events of this day 20 years ago. 52 people, 56 if you include the alleged bombers, killed in London in train stations and on a bus. We were told it was Islamist extremism, and I think most people believe that. We'll come to that in a minute about the impact it had on the country. But Isabel is listening with great interest on the Sky documentary, which is airing at the moment. One of the guys who survived the bombing said that on the day he missed his normal train, but very strangely, one arrived straight after the one that he had missed. But that actually never happened, says Isabel. The second train is the one that blew up. Has anybody ever looked at the schedule of the extra train? Perhaps they added a second train to try and have less people on it and as such maybe limit the damages. There's so many of these coming in. Gary says perhaps the terrorism training Tony mentioned was training on how to respond to terrorism, or maybe to prevent it, Gary. That's very good. Hi to Pandora. Richie, recall to Khalid Khalik was jailed 18 months over a planted DVD in his home. with CIA training manual on, or Al-Qaeda training manual on it, that he had never accessed. He was a useful witness to the cops, and he knew too much about Mohammed Sadiqi Khan. Hi to Ardo. Richie, Tony mentioned the desire to start a Third World War. What does he have to say about the Albert Pike letter, which predicts that World War III will emerge from the Middle East? There's many more of these. I better stop and allow you back in, T.
Well, the last one, quite clearly, that's a fascinating coincidence, isn't it? This 1871 letter, allegedly written by one of the top Freemasons in America who'd been involved in the American Civil War. Well, what they were doing in the Civil War was really not much to do with slavery. It's much more to do with centralizing power in Washington during the Civil War. So Albert Pike, he was a captain in the Confederate Army, but he was also the Grand Master of the Scottish Rite Freemasons, whose motto is Ordo ab Chao, order from chaos. So if you can see chaos going around you, maybe someone is doing that deliberately in order to control the outcome. So that letter was sent to Mazzini over in Italy, who was doing a similar thing in Italy, bringing all these various different city states and provinces together into one country, centralizing power. And it says basically, in a nutshell, Richie, it says the First World War will be, well, they talk about three world wars. The first one, the idea is to clear the Ottoman Empire out of Palestine. The second one, to plant a crusader state, which, you know, I think we can look at as Israel. And the Third World War, the idea is the Zionists are going to have a massive fight with the Muslim countries. And, you know, I look at this as quite similar to the loyalist offensive with the British Army in Northern Ireland. It's almost as if Northern Ireland was a trial run for this, you know, this massive war they're trying to create in the Middle East. So whether or not that's true is, well, I mean, it's an amazing, a bit like Peter Power's spooky coincidence, isn't it? If the letter is true or not, you know, but it certainly seems to be what's going on in front of our eyes.
The thing about a massive war escalating in the Middle East is that there appears to be no desire whatsoever on the part of the Egyptian governments, the governments of Qatar, Oman, Saudi Arabia, Pakistan. None of these countries wants to get involved with Israel. It doesn't seem to matter. I mean, we can say it. This is a free speech platform, as is Tony's radio show every Friday. It's exceptional, not the BCFM politics show. Check out thisweek.org.uk. Check out bilderberg.org. Listen to Tony's program. Look, we'll say it. The Israelis are committing genocide. We know this. I mean, it astounds me that even Sky News now are putting IDF soldiers on the air. And they're saying, yeah, we're just killing civilians arbitrarily. Just killing them. As has been broadcast today on Sky. You even have a contractor working for this dodgy aid organisation, which is run by Israel and America. He spoke to the BBC on Friday or Saturday. And he said, our employees are just shooting at Israelis coming forward hungry. So no matter what Israel does, and it is a genocidal construct, it exists to destroy the Palestinians, that's all it does. It doesn't matter to Pakistan, to Egypt, to Morocco, to, as I said, to Saudi Arabia. I just don't see how those countries could be, even Iran, could be motivated into a major conflict with Israel that would be scalable or would have the scale that we would say, okay, that's a third world war. Now, maybe it's wishful thinking on my part, Tony. What do you reckon?
Well, I remember having a chat to a guy who'd been involved in the Vietnam War years ago, and he was talking about how they got that going through, it was the Gulf of Tonkin incident with Jim Morrison's dad involved in that, as I'm not sure if he was an admiral at the time. The idea is you just create a false story, a false event, and you put this out across the news across the world. They even had a picnic, apparently, with the Vietnamese government, the American embassy. And the news story that came out of it was that people had been killed and attacked at the picnic, and actually happened. But the idea is, and what he explained is that you need to harden the sides before you have a really big war. This expression, hardening the sides, the idea is that people have got to kind of choose in their own minds. You've got to force them to choose one side or the other, and, you know, persuade people, as they're doing in this country right now. Sadiq Khan is an evil mayor of London. Well, he may be, but the reason apparently is because he's a Muslim. And, the Muslims are trying to get into Britain and take over Britain. These sorts of ideas are being pushed there out there by the likes of Katie Hopkins, Tommy Robinson, people like that, in order to get people to go one side or other of this divide. The divide really starting, it seems to me, with the Palestine-Israel conflict and working its way right over to civil society here in Britain. So, I mean, that seems to be what's going on. And the outcome, the point of it all, I mean, obviously, one of the major points is an enormous clampdown on civil liberties. So anybody that people in authority don't like the Palestine Action people now, can just be thrown in jail, intimidated, in a sort of 1984-style fashion. And also, of course, the arms companies stand to make an absolute fortune. And
billions.
Economies start to collapse, normal people's, family businesses start to collapse because the war economy is starting, because there's no disabled people, they're not getting any money, they can't spend it, people, there's less money circulating in the economy, etc. All this money starts to be funneled into the war machine. That happened in the Second World War here in Britain, but that's because we were, I think we were fighting a just war against Hitler then. But the idea is that the whole, I mean, literally the whole of the Western world is now predicated, it seems to me, on these massive private equity firms, BlackRock and people like that. They just want, every time they see chaos, like whether it's a farm,
an opportunity.
Managed to carry on the war. They are snapping up this stuff. They're owning it. They're taking it over.
I want to push back. Hang on.
That's the point. That's the point of the chaos. What I'm trying to say.
Let me push back on Katie Hopkins and Tommy Robinson, both of whom I don't pay very much attention to these days. I understand where you're coming from. I think it's a lot more complex than you're letting on, and I think you know it too, because while there might be an agenda to convince people that the Muslims are taking over, I challenge you to come up here to Weest in Salford. I challenge you to come to Burnage in Manchester, come to Bradford, to the eyes and ears of people living in those parts of the world. In the last 2 to 3 years particularly, it looks to them like their communities are changing. And a lot of very young men whose religion would be Islam have arrived in their communities. Properties are being basically, you've got land, not landowners, but you've got prospectors, people who make their money in property. You've got them buying up flats and buying up houses and then taking 5-year deals with the local authority who take the property and put these young men, a lot of them are young men, and they are coming from countries where Islam would be the philosophy. And they see it happening, Tony. Can't get a place for the kid in school. I'm struggling to get a doctor's appointment. My community is transforming in front of me. So as far as those people are concerned, the Muslims are taking over. You can leave Katie Hopkins and Tommy Robinson out of it, but that's how people see it. And my final word on it before you come back in, the reason why this narrative endures is because the left completely abandoned working class communities up and down this country. And when people raised these concerns, they were accused of being dirty little bigots. And they were told that waving the Union Jack or the St. George's cross flag is, it's a seedy, kind of a dirty thing to do. You can't deny what people see in front of their eyes. I've lived in Weest and Salford since 2019. Jesus wept, the change demographically here has been staggering, Tony. Staggering.
Yeah, okay. So we've got crims in all communities and we've got good and bad people in all communities. My own experience of Muslims in Bristol is they tend to be rather godly, rather caring, rather thoughtful. And obviously there are many people who are part of those indigenous communities and incoming. I mean, we've got Somali communities, we've got Chinese communities, we've got all sorts in Bristol. This is like throwing the baby out with the bathwater. What we're saying here, apparently, is that because somebody is Asian, well, we don't really know if they're Muslim or not, and they may be a criminal, that they're a Muslim. Now, look, you have to look inside someone's heart to know what their faith is. So I just don't buy that at all. And it's the same exact thing with the Zionists and Jewish people. So there are some people, Jewish people, who are very close to God, others who are criminals. And so what they're trying to do is to frame everything, it seems to me, as they, I'm sure you know, did in Northern Ireland, as a religious conflict. It's actually nothing of the sort. It's a conflict of racists. So the bad people in the different communities are using their difficult situation that they're in, and they're blaming the people across the road for it. They're not blaming the people in the City of London. They're not blaming the people in central government, in the Treasury. They're not blaming people in the deep state, Chatham House, and these other elite institutions, in the universities, in the mass media, because they don't see them every day. They don't see them face to face. They're not blaming them. And whilst we mentioned the head of the snake, I had a fascinating conversation with a woman in Lymington last week when I was down on the south coast, just walking along the road with a little kiddie who she was chatting to the little kid about God, and I intervened a little bit. She didn't mind at all. And at the end of it, we were having a conversation about what's going on in the world. And she said to me, she stopped and turned to me. She said, actually, I think England is the head of the snake. You know, that's interesting. We had a laugh about it. And I gave her my card. But at the end of the day, the city is the problem. The control of money is the problem. If you look into the horrific, I mean, literally Nazified, fascistic, eugenicist attack on disabled people that the Starmer government tried to do last week, this is unnecessary. It's totally unnecessary. The Bank of England can just make this money up out of nowhere, and it can give it to disabled people. So what they're doing is utterly cruel and vicious. And the people at the heart of it all, of course, are the City of London. And if you have a look at the guilds and the guild hall, people that actually run the City of London, and by the way, the Royal Courts of Justice, which are there, where the Palestinian Action Protest was on Friday, and the City of London Police, you will find whole series of livery companies and Masonic lodges where much of the discussion takes place in total secrecy. And I would suggest to you that you have there, that is the snake in many ways in this country and possibly in many other parts of the world, because it extends, of course, to the United States and places like Israel. And the way it operates is you've got these basic covens of 13 or maybe more in a Masonic lodge, and the head of each one is then in another coven. So, but they use these things as cover, basically. So things like the Order of the Garter, these orders of chivalry, is a cover for a coven. In fact, if you look at the Order of the Garter, it's 26 in the Order of the Garter, which controls the British monarchy, and that's two covens of 13. And if you also look at the livery companies in the City of London in the Guildhall, these are also very similar. They have these elite secret organisations which are absolutely secretive, and they do not like talking to anybody about it. I was just watching something the other day about the head of HMRC, the tax people, in the Spider's Web documentary about the City of London. And he's having a massive banquet whilst he's just managed to lobby to get his one of his mates at BT not to be paying tax. So these people are crooks, but they're hiding it all under the, I think, in these orders of chivalry, you know, sir this and sir that, in not just in the UK, of course, in other places like Germany, France, these things, Malta, they also exist. And they're using their secrecy to cover criminality.
Let me come back in. I buy into pretty much all of that because, like yourself, I've been interviewing people, listening to people, reading people and watching people for years. But you're not going to bring the ordinary man and woman in Salford or in Derby with you. And I don't mean you, I mean in general, unless you meet people halfway and unless you listen to their concerns. Like, it's not going to wash when somebody like yourself says, the Muslim guys coming in on the small boats, they're no less likely to tend towards criminality. That won't wash with people because people can see what's happening in their own communities. Where these undocumented males come in to cities here and in Ireland, there is an increase in petty crime and an increase in serious crime, assaults against women. These are not the same as us, Tony. Like it or lump it. And I'm like you. Most Muslims I've met in my life are like most Christians or like most agnostics. Of course they are. Of course, that's been my experience. I wouldn't deny it. A Muslim or an agent isn't any more likely. But what we see in this country and in Ireland is we see pockets. It's almost deliberate. Again, young men coming in to the country, burning or tearing up the documentation before they arrive, being handed accommodation that depletes the accommodation available in those areas to the detriment of people who need a home. They put them up in hotels. Now you don't have a hotel to go and have your confirmation or your bar mitzvah, all of this stuff. And when you tell people that, well, no, you're just being silly, they're never going to look at the City of London, the Crown Corporation, the Masonic Lodges. They're not, Tony, unless people acknowledge that in their communities, huge problems.
I understand that, right?
And the grooming gangs. I could be here all day about the grooming gangs.
No, well, we can talk about it because we're not trying to appeal. I'm not trying to appeal to the masses.
No, I know you're not.
I'm just talking about the head of the snake, what it is. But you're absolutely right about the, you know, this massive influx of criminality. That is quite clearly deliberate. Organized crime gangs doing it, and the European Union helping it all along, which is, of course, not democratic at all anyway, which is run by organized crime, by the way. And so that is the purpose of that, is to just undermine community, undermine society, bring down wages. This is a majorly important, undermine trade union, so that bringing down paying conditions. But this is an attempt to undermine and to cause chaos. This is what it is. And I'm not saying that the people who are coming on the boats, et cetera, are squeaky clean. They're not. They're economic migrants. They're looking to make better for themselves and their families. And if they may be straying to crime, well, I mean, Brits do that too. And sometimes that's, I think, the purpose of a lot of this. I remember chatting to David Southwell, the author of, it'd be great if you could get hold of him, but I think he's gone pretty underground now. He wrote a book called The History of Organized Crime, which is a brilliant coffee table book. And he explained to me, he said that all sorts of forms of prohibition and poverty, organized crime love it because they thrive. All these people who can't get a job, oh no, they're hungry, they need to feed the kids, they're absolute cannon fodder for organized crime. That organized crime will suck them up, give them a job, and then suddenly they're in the black economy and they're criminals. The only trouble is that you know, they may go to prison, they may get caught, so they're completely under the control of the crime bosses. And this is really a way, I think, of totally undermining the society that you and I grew up in. I mean, the idea is to just totally destroy it, I think, and those values and the morals that went with it.
Yeah, and it's hugely important, that, because that's a big barrier. It's a barrier to entry, but by that I mean people reaching some understanding that the world they thought existed doesn't exist at all, that it's a much darker place, and that there are agendas at play where humanity is supposed to be taken into, as we've often talked about over the years, a very technocratic, dystopian future where everything we do, everything we say and think is controlled. And of course, you're right, these small boat crossings, the Irish attitude to immigration, which is just open the doors and allow anybody else in. Of course, that's designed specifically to prevent people talking about the bigger picture, because this is their reality. Like, it's your reality, isn't it? If you're living in a place like where I live, which is the ultimate working class estate. This is where I live. I love it. Proud of it. I'm a working class lad. But you see it transformed and you see the impact it has on people. It hurts people. It saddens people. It angers people. It frustrates them. They see their life chances diminish slowly but surely. They see two-tier policing. All of this stuff, which I believe is deliberate, but they don't know that.
Look, it's worse than that. As of Friday, it's a police state. We're living in a police state.
The 83-year-old priest, yeah.
If you say now that you support Palestine Action, which is a non-violent direct action group, a brilliant tradition we've got of non-violent direct action, including, by the way, the suffragettes burnt buildings down, right?
Yeah.
Their main campaign was actually a window smashing campaign, which, you know, you could injure somebody on the other side of the window. But the Palestine Action have been breaking into arms factories, etc., and destroying equipment, not harming people at all. And Rowley has been, and by the way, I don't know how much you know about this, but the Palestine Action court cases that have been going on at the moment, most of them have had to be halted because Yvette Cooper, the Home Secretary, and Mark Rowley, the Chief Constable of the Metropolitan Police, have been blabbing off and spouting off lies about Palestine Action being violent, using weapons, all this sort of thing against people, that the trials have had to be halted because this is all sub judice. They're prejudicing the juries. So this is how messy it's got. But it's becoming a police state. If you cannot take action to stop genocide in British society, and if you do, the police come and arrest you, or if you even suggest that it might be a good thing to do that, you're living in a police state. That's where we really are now. And if you think about it, we had the report over the weekend, didn't we, from MI6. MI5. There's the BBC have done a brilliant, I don't often say this, brilliant investigation into an MI5 agent who was a Nazi, not a neo-Nazi, a Nazi machete-wielding madman who was trying to attack his girlfriend with a machete. And the BBC have exposed a whole series of lies that this is the kind of guy that is one of their informants. And he's been paid by the state. So this is what these are the people that should be being arrested and dealt with. And if we don't do it, we really literally are heading towards a full on fascist society.
Just want to push back again on your claim, that there's been no evidence of violent behaviour by anybody connected with Palestine Action. I'm just reading a High Court judgment which was basically the basis to refuse their appeal because they wanted to appeal against the ban. And according to the High Court judgment, the methods have become more aggressive with members of Palestine Action demonstrating a willingness to use violence. And that's straight out of the High Court.
I think what they said, I think there was a statement from somebody from Palestine Action that they said, I will not be violent if someone, or I am not going to be non-violent if somebody uses violence against me. I think that's where it comes from, as far as I can understand. Now, I don't think in any of these cases there's any examples of Palestine Action people being violent to those trying to arrest them, etc., or security, because what they do is they get in, they do the damage, and then when security turns up, they just hand themselves in or they run away. So I think that's where this is coming from. And maybe that wasn't a wise thing to say. I'm not going to, but actually it is within their rights. If someone starts to, rather than apprehend them, to attack them and use violence against them, then they may well be within their rights legally to defend themselves. So that should explain that. And of course, the lawyers for the Crown are going to use these sorts of excuses, as Mark Rowley has been using these excuses on the TV over the weekend.
Yeah, it was. Isn't it funny how unsurprising it was to see footage of an 83-year-old lady, former reverend, being arrested for sitting on a deck chair holding a poster or a placard saying that she agreed with the spirit of what it is that Palestine Action has been doing. Isn't that kind of telling, isn't it, where we are today in 2025?
It is.
But we're not surprised.
And just on the positive side, right, this is absolutely insane and unprecedented for it to be like this. This is a long, long tradition going back hundreds of years in this country. This non-violent direct action tradition, which, if you go back to the 1990s, I worked with some women who managed to, in fact, I helped them make the film because they went to court afterwards. They went into a Wharton, I think it was, BAE Systems base, and smashed up a Hawk jet, which was going to the dictatorship in Indonesia. And after 6 months, not a year and a half, which happens now, after 6 months, they came to court, to the High Court eventually, and at the Old Bailey, found them not guilty because they said, we were trying to prevent a greater crime, and they went free. But in those days, that was the way the law went. Now what they've done is they've stopped them introducing anything to do with motives into the cases. And also they're dragging these cases out for years and keeping people in custody on remand, even though they haven't actually done anything, they're not committing terrorism. What they're doing is they're damaging a machine, which is making a drone, which is going to be used to kill Palestinians. And so there is this long, long tradition of this sort of stuff been going on. And so it's it is really is, like I say, it's unprecedented to see this sort of, I mean, I don't honestly know how long it can go on. You're right to say about people like this being arrested. Maybe this is just going to be become the norm. Maybe that's why they're emptying the jails last year, so they can fill them up with old ladies and vicars.
With old ladies and people who say a prayer 500 feet from an abortion centre. I agree. Tony Gosling is our guest. We've got Tony for another 8 minutes, and we will leave it there because we've had a couple of hundred messages come in, and many of them are fast. I want to read quite a few of them up until the end of the programme. I happen to believe personally, tragically, these false flag events are ultimately very successful. I believe the 7th of July false flag event was ultimately successful. I remember, I lived, it's just before we left and decamped to Spain. I remember the shock around Manchester, South Manchester, in communities, the horror that, it hit people, the horror of it. And I have no doubt that it softened people's stance when it came to the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. Maybe you'll have a quick comment on that, but I have to ask you as well about something. Maybe it's related, maybe on some level it's related, maybe everything is related, Tony, but for the Department of Justice to announce over the weekend that Jeffrey Epstein, the paedophile, the financier, friend of Prince Andrew, of course, and many others, Donald Trump, Bill Clinton and Hillary and many others, that Epstein didn't have a client list. He wasn't blackmailing prominent citizens of business and of politics, and he definitely wasn't suicided. What is your response to that? Because much hilarity I noticed on social media overnight. What do you reckon?
I think Virginia Giuffre was murdered. That's what I think, because she was a very, very important figure exposing a lot of this stuff. She was Virginia Roberts at the time, and the famous picture with Andrew, because this is an intelligence operation. It's an intelligence honeypot. So all sorts of people are brought in there. They're filmed, recorded, and the hard drives are sitting in Tel Aviv right now. And they're some of these people are, I imagine, being threatened, saying, you're going to do this, you're going to make this decision now. I think this is one of the reasons why so many people who seem absolutely useless and incompetent are being propelled into powerful positions, is because they're blackmailable. And of course, Epstein and Ghislaine Maxwell were running this. I think Ghislaine was probably the main organizer, the main part of it. And I would imagine that she still has some sort of role from even within jail, but it was certainly, a Mossad, as of course her father was involved with the
Mossad. It's been several years since Virginia Giuffre came out and said that Prince Andrew had effectively committed statutory rape or rape, right? So there was a lot of time. Hang on,
let me finish. Yeah. I mean, they were both victims, Richie.
Yes, but hang on. There was from the time. Even from the time Maitlis interviewed Prince Andrew on BBC Two or whatever, BBC One, since then, a lot of water has flown under the bridge. If Virginia Giuffre knew other names, why didn't she release them, do you think?
Well, maybe she was planning to, and that's why she was murdered. Certainly, the thing is, she is an absolute running source. She was right in the middle of all of that. And they had to get rid of her because she could be on TV programs. She's well known. Many journalists have got her number, etc. She's a ticking time bomb. And the other thing, look, to say about all of this 7/7, etc. stuff is you've got to understand what's going on now is a kind of rerun of the Crusades, the medieval Crusades. You know, that you think of all these Europeans going out to create, their. Well, it wasn't a caliphate, was it? It was the kingdom in Jerusalem. We had several kings. The Templars went over there. You go to Bristol now, you find Baldwin Street in the centre of Bristol. Baldwin was the king of Jerusalem. So they had a go back in medieval times. The Satanists did, and that's who the Templars were, by the way. And they failed. So they're having another go today, and they're doing a lot better, it seems. So it does seem to me it's all coming to a head. In other words, the whole of history is coming to a head. And that's why on my show every week I say, well, it's not the end of the world. Or is it? Because it could be, Richie. It really could be the ultimate, you know, World War III, a massive battle in the Middle East, and Armageddon. That seems to be, you know, where we're heading at the moment.
It wouldn't be, I mean, it might very well be, it wouldn't be an extinction-level event. So obviously many, many millions, if not tens of millions, might die. But the Earth would endure, wouldn't it? And it's really a matter of what would be left over, what would happen thereafter. Do you want to give me a quick answer on that before
on? We're living in a world now where we've got television and we've got nuclear weapons. Now, we're the first generation to really have to deal with it. And I think we'd better be ahead of the game. We better understand that the ruthless people are going to use those tools to bamboozle humanity whichever way they want. And you can be damn sure if those nukes start going off, they're going to be in a little bunker right under the ground somewhere, and they'll pop up afterwards saying, "Ah, it's our world now." But I think there's definitely eugenics and population destruction is in the minds of the elite. That's what they want. They want to reduce the Earth's population. And what better way to do it than by, obviously nuclear war is also about fear. You can use a nuclear weapon to scare someone into doing what you want as well. But we've really got to be up to speed, I think, on understanding that this whole polarity between China and America, I don't think there's much difference between the two. If I look at the sort of surveillance that's been rolled out in China and the control there is within the US political system, that I would suggest that both of them are being controlled by the same side. The only really big independent force in the world, it seems to me, are the Russians, the Orthodox, good old Orthodox Russians.
We'll save that row for another program. I look forward to that. Tony has written a book, by the way, which places a lot of this in context. It's called The Traitors of Arnhem. You'll find it online. You'll find it on thisweek.org.uk, Amazon. Do check it out. Not the BCFM Politics Show, live on Friday. It's a must listen.
Not Amazon.
Don't buy it from Amazon.
We want your passport. So I said no. And so they booted me off Amazon. It's on eBay. But the easiest way to get a link to it is just go to
Bilderberg.org. Yeah.
The links are there. And it's free. If you can't afford it, just, you know, don't want the paper version, you can download it and read it for
yourself. Yeah, but if you can afford it, do pay for it, because independent journalism is disappearing. Tony, thanks for today. I really appreciate it. I look forward to speaking next month. And I'll be listening on Friday, as always. Cheers, Tony. Thanks for that. Right. The great Tony Gosling, live on the Richie Allen Show for Monday, the 7th of July, 2025. Lots of comments obviously came in during my conversation with Tony. I'm going to get to them in a moment. Thank you for all of these messages. I really appreciate them. Colin was in touch to say that Crusades were a reaction to the 200 years of Islam rampaging on Christian countries. Well, it depends on how far you want to go back. Very subjective, Colin. Very subjective. Depends on how far you want to go back. Tim says Israeli false flags go back as far as the 50s when they bombed the Alexandra Hotel in Egypt. It's documented, admittedly, but now it's old news. Hello to John Taylor. Richie, I don't believe nuclear weapons exist. I think the idea of them was put out there as another of the many things to put people into a state of fear. Well, people who lived in Hiroshima and Nagasaki, John, might disagree with you. People who survived it. There's enough images and video film out there to suggest to me that a bomb, whether you call it a nuclear bomb or not, but a bomb capable of causing incredible destruction, existed in the Second World War, existed towards the end of it. And I imagine they have thermonuclear weapons today that could level entire countries. That's my take on it. But thank you. Listen, I don't know, I suppose. Hi to Carl. Richie, Jews who follow the Jewish teachings are a danger to the rest of society. Some of their beliefs and reasoning for their behaviour is shocking. Some of their beliefs and the reasons for their behaviour is shocking, he says. More to the point, they have the power and backing to carry out these atrocities. And then he mentions dancing Israelis. But, Carl, you can apply that to any belief system, whether it's a belief system around religion or any other philosophy. What about the interpretation of Islam in places around the world where unspeakable things are done? I saw a report today out of Afghanistan I didn't see it on the mainstream media now, but I saw a report and a video, I wish I hadn't seen it, of a man having his hand amputated because he allegedly stole something. The video is genuine and it's very, very recent. What about that belief system? Isn't that a danger to society? Like, if you believe it's okay to chop somebody's hand off because they stole, aren't you a danger to society? You see where I'm going with that? Hi again to Mark, who says, there are numerous articles in the press concerning Virginia Giuffre being in a domestic abuse relationship. She's out of the way now, so the case is closed. Donald Trump was on the Epstein list, according to Mark. Alan Dershowitz is the real Mossad demon, says Mark. Well, didn't Dershowitz admit being in Mossad recently? Or am I wrong? I think so. I think I'm right. Hi to Paul. Richie, I read that buses were diverted so the Israeli embassy would have a better view of the 7th of July attacks. I'm not sure, but Netanyahu seemingly was there, says Paul. Thank you, Paul. Hi to Nigel. Richie, I was, he says, indifferent to a lot of what's been going on for a long time, though my critical thinking ability always had me sceptical, especially since the 9/11 attacks. Listening to your show has broadened my mind and saved my sanity, says Nigel in Ards. And he sent me a WhatsApp video. Thank you, Nigel. I'll check it out a bit later on. Ray's in Edinburgh and he says, if you realise, if you believe, that the hidden hand wants a one world government, one world army and a single currency for the world, everything makes sense. Add to this population reduction, think of it as a 100-year plan and it all adds up, says Ray. Thank you, Ray. Thank you, Ray. Thank you, Colin. I like pushing back. Dominic says, Richie, ask Tony about Bandage Man in respect of the 7th of July bombing. Sorry I didn't see that, Dominic. Appreciate it. A listener came on to say that the lobby, namely the Israeli lobby, funds Tommy Robinson and Katie Hopkins. It's a 40-year plan from Netanyahu, literally a demon. Now, we know that Tommy Shitbird Robinson has been seen in Israel. We know this. But whether or not he is funded by the Israelis is a matter of opinion, I think. I don't know if there is any hard evidence that Robinson has taken money from the Israelis. I'm not being naive. Maybe he has done. But is there any evidence? As for Katie Hopkins, I don't know. I just don't know, really. When it comes to her, I don't have a lot of time for her. Gabriel is in Gary Owen. Perhaps loyalty to a state like Israel is easily explained as they are all military personnel. The Jewish angle is a distraction which the Israeli savages, he says, have hid behind for the past 70 years. Lynette is a fan of Tommy Robinson. I love Tony, but don't agree with his stance on Robinson. Robinson has been maligned by the media. And if you listen to him, he has a reasonable argument and he's been persecuted by the establishment. I've changed my mind on him, says Lynette, and you are entitled to your opinion, Lynette. But all the evidence is that Tommy Robinson is a deep state creation. Robinson is just another populist. Not saying nothing new that hasn't been said by conservative commentators over the last 50, 60, 70 years. Very, very wealthy man, Robinson, and backed certainly by people in America on the conservative right to the tune of a lot of money, would be my opinion. But it's not for me to tell you what to think. David says in 64, an Israeli submarine torpedoed the USS Liberty, hoping to blame Egypt, but intelligence had already intercepted the false flag, yet there was no retaliation. William is in Scotland. He says, I see it a bit like this. Where you find MI5, you find Mossad, you find the CIA. They are different only in name, and they are not controlled by any political leaders, says William. Thank you, William. Hi to Carlos. Don't tell them your name, Pike. It's the BBC in plain sight. We were talking about Albert Pike earlier on and his 19th century prediction about the world wars. Perksy says, hello Perksy, Israel, UK, reign over US states of mind, says Perksy. We're talking about where does the real power lie? Is it the City of London? Is it in Tel Aviv? Is it in DC? People should familiarise themselves with characters like Leo Strauss, speaking of the project for a new American century. Right, now Strauss died in the early 70s, but he's one of the fathers of neoconservatism, and a very interesting man indeed. Check him out, because reading about guys like him might give us some idea of how events have unfolded in the last 30, 40 years and where they might be going. Where they might be going. Good evening, Elizabeth. Now, the discussion you had with Tony brought it all back to me. I followed what happened in London in real time, and I knew it was a false flag because I'd already thoroughly read up and checked out September the 11th, all the details about the metal being exposed upwards was consistent with a blast from underneath. Yes, that's right, Elizabeth. Most independent thinkers, most non-mainstream media journalists have concluded that bombs were placed underneath the train carriages. I also heard the report live at the time from Peter Power about the exercise, just as planes were doing exercises on September the 11th, blurring what is real with what was an exercise, says Elizabeth. Hi to Johnny Cash, must be the real one. Richie, I've looked all over the internet and cannot find any video of the Christchurch Mosque massacre. Why is this, I wonder, says Johnny. I don't know, Johnny. I thought videos would still be there on certain websites, but maybe not. Hi to Dredger. Hello, Dredger. Richie, I remember on 7th of July between 10 a.m. and 12 noon, a news report came on the BBC and ITV that police had shot two terrorists near Canary Wharf. That report disappeared by 2 p.m. Now, this is true. What Dredger has shared with us there is 100% true. And I suppose at the time, they blamed what they called the inaccurate reporting. They blamed it on the chaos of the situation. So Dredger is right. It was reported on the BBC and on ITV on the morning of 7th of July that police had shot two alleged terrorists near Canary Wharf, but this was later retracted. Again, when they did speak about it, because they had to speak about it, on the day they said, well, it's a very confusing scene and reports are emerging all the time. Not all of them will be accurate. We have to, you know, this is a very live situation, yada, yada, yada. So things are being reported and we can't confirm them, yada, yada, yada. But some people believe that the two people shot may very well have been two of the men who were ultimately blamed for it, right? You see, maybe, who knows, I don't know. But a lot of wise men and women believe so. Let me go back up to the top. Thank you for all of these messages. Terence says the Crusades were justified. Islam conquered all of the Christian Middle East and North Africa, murdering millions, including the conquest of Spain and the attempted invasion of France that was stopped by Karl Martel and the Frankish army. Islam was founded in 632 AD and the entire Middle East was Christian by the 3rd and 4th century. Thank you for those messages. Let me just check out the BBC News website and Sky, bring you up to date with the headlines. Again, and I talked about this earlier on, the BBC is all over the flooding in Texas that came about because of the Guadalupe River bursting its banks because of heavy rain on Friday. And I opined at the beginning of this programme as to the reasons why the British media will give so much coverage to something that has happened thousands of miles away in America. And I believe there are some very deep reasons why they do it, right? Because ultimately, the flooding in Texas and the loss of life there, which is terrible, isn't really relevant to a British audience, a British news audience, not relevant to you. Again, maybe 5 minutes or 2 minutes before the end of a bulletin, you can say it because it's it's an item of interest. But they give so much coverage to it, I believe, because it ties in with their climate catastrophe agenda. Here's an interesting one. You remember last year there was a very serious incident at Manchester Airport. Remember, July 23rd last year, airport police were called to an incident at the Starbucks Cafe in Terminal 2. July 23rd, a man, a British Muslim, was believed to have headbutted a customer. And then four police officers approached him and others at the pay station in the terminal's car park. And footage emerged later of the police arresting some of these guys, and one of the police officers seemingly stamped on a guy's head while he was lying face down, prone on the ground. Well, this is in court now. This airport brawl has eventually made it to court there. A jury at Liverpool Crown Court have seen airport camera footage from different angles showing what seems to be a high level of violence towards the officers. It's an interesting case, this, because it happened not long after what happened in Southport, you might remember, where the young girls were murdered, which led to people opining about it online, and that was later on blamed for riots and disorder in different parts of the country. So two guys are on trial, accused of assaulting police officers. They deny the allegations. The footage of it is very interesting indeed. That's making the BBC News website this afternoon. And that's kind of it, really. Benjamin Netanyahu has been in DC today meeting the US President Donald Trump. Trump is talking about how he can bring home the hostages and how he can broker a deal between Hamas and the Israelis. Whether that is true or not, I don't know. It'll remain. That remains to be seen. We'll have to watch that over the next few days. A day is a very, very long time in politics. Things move so quickly these days, don't they? And that's pretty much it, really. For me today, I'm going to take my leave of you now. Just to say that tomorrow, before I do that, I'll read some more. I have some more messages coming in. Tim says, Richie, confusion of events on the day. Wasn't that the same excuse as reporting the collapse of World Trade Center 7 before it hit the ground? Yes, that's right. Remember that? When the BBC reported that World Trade Center Building 7 had collapsed, when in fact we could see the building standing behind the reporter. It was still there in a live shot. That's right. And they said it was all very confusing. The confusing chaos, information coming in on the second. Hi to Lee Walker, who recommends a documentary called Ripple Effect. A number of you have seen this documentary. Me too. I watched it some years ago. It's an interesting film. Mark says, Richie, I remember the police saying they shot dead Jean-Charles de Menezes, the Brazilian man, because he was carrying a bag with a wire sticking out from it. He ran from them, jumped the barriers at the tube station. We now know there was no bag. He wasn't running away, and he never jumped the barriers. They followed him and put 7 bullets into the man. Nobody was prosecuted, says Mark. This is true. Very strange case of John Charles de Menezes. Hi to Carol in Waterford. Hello, Carol. Richie, you'll want to watch BBC Two at 7. Weather, beyond the forecast, heatwaves, the new normal. Carol is telling me that the BBC is running a programme this evening which is going to be a bit of climate change propaganda. Thank you, Carol. No doubt I'll check it out. Wayne has been in touch to say, Richie, I have an occult perspective on the bombings. Any occultist, and I believe the Hidden Hand are black occultists, time rituals and projects using auspicious dates to increase their chances of success. So Wayne reckons the people behind many of these agendas and false flag attacks are occultists, and they schedule these events using dates deliberately choosing dates to increase their chances of success. Number 7, says Wayne, is considered to be a spiritual and a lucky number. Day, month and year are all number 7, as numerologically 2005 is year 7. Yes, if you add 2 and 0 and 0 and 5, you get 7. It was on day 7, on the 7th month. That's right, Wayne, maybe there's something to it. Wayne certainly seems to think so. In any case, thank you, Wayne. Well, there you go now, dear listener.